Welcome to the Football Fill-In. Who says the FA Cup is dead? We have just had 20 goals on a bouting weekend of the famous Cup. Spurs also proved that they are still a little bit Spursy under Ange Postecoglou, getting pumped 3-0 away at Fulham. And also, a lot of people have had their say on the Ben White debate. We give you a little bit of an alternative look at it. It's Football Fill-In.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Right, lads, welcome to Monday morning. Welcome to the Football Fill-In. As usual, we've got Mark Goldbridge, we've got Dave Watson. Marky boy, we've got to start with you because Man United somehow beat Liverpool 4-3 yesterday after extra time in the FA Cup. It was a wicked game. I didn't see this one come in. Did you enjoy doing the watch-along?
100%. And I don't think it was somehow. I mean, I think ultimately, I don't feel like we were, you know, lucky. I think it was a weird game, but I think Liverpool were masters of their own downfall. As soon as that Antony goal went in, it was almost like they were as stunned as everybody else and the crowd was roaring, and I think United took advantage of it. It had a real, I mean, obviously that can't happen in a Premier League game. It ends up 2-2 and you take a good point, don't you? But the fact that, you know, this is the wonder of the cup, isn't it? It goes into extra time. I'm like, we've equalised, but we've got no defenders on. We've got about 10 attackers on. And I thought Liverpool are just going to reset here and just pick us off. And they didn't really reset. I know they scored with Elliott, but they never really took control of the game. And United just went this one for one, sort of Bruno at centre-back, and, you know, won it with Ahmad at the end. And I think, you know, Man United needed to win that more than Liverpool. But you can tell, you know, with Klopp's comments at the end that they were disappointed. And, you know, just absolutely fantastic result.
Klopp was absolutely fuming at the end, wasn't he? We're going to talk about the game in a minute. First of all, what I want to ask you, though, is when it comes to FA Cup matches, right? So 20 goals we've just had over the weekend, over four matches, right? Why is it that you get so many goals in FA Cup? Is it that people just sort of, do they just sort of go for it a bit more? Is it like throw all caution to the wind? It's the FA Cup. If we lose, we're out. It's not the end of the world. Is that a case of that or what?
I think so. I think you do have a different mentality. It doesn't matter whether you're Coventry playing in the Championship or you're obviously the other teams playing in the Premier League. It frees you up a little bit. I think because it were always going to go to penalties and there were going to be a winner on the day, I think players wanted to go for it. You know what I mean? Penalties, we love to see it, but players not necessarily would want to get to that stage because you're either a hero or you're a villain type scenario pretty quickly. So I think the games were more open, especially later on in the game. And the Man United game that we're talking about, like, I can't believe that if you're a Man United fan, when he actually scored the winner, you're probably thinking, I can't believe that's just happened. But I think Liverpool on the other foot would have been exactly the same, because certainly in the second half, Liverpool missed so many chances. But as the game went on, it was just like ping pong, boom, 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 you have a chance, we have a chance, because they wanted to win the game. And nobody can ever question the FA Cup in terms of teams wanting to win it. But the excitement level, yeah, and maybe the format of a penalty shootout and a decision on the day helped the whole spectacle this weekend. But for football, I think it was just a win all round. But Man United somehow got the job done. And I think Klopp's Liverpool team will have woke up this morning, because the moments on transition and counter were just incredible. And a number of times they outnumbered the United defence, whoever they were at the time, 3v2s, 4v2s, 5v2s, 5v3s. And you put them training sessions on in the week, the goalie would have to make some saves, but they're scoring 5-6 goals relatively comfortably, you know.
The FA Cup draw was done after the game yesterday, wasn't it? Coventry got their dream draw, the one that they probably were buzzing about the most. I think so, anyway. Yeah. Manchester United in the semi-final. Is this going to be a walk in the park for Man United? But from Coventry fans' perspective, what a day out this is going to be as well.
Well, no, if you're a Coventry fan, you'd rather get Man United over Man City, with all due respect. Yeah. I mean, I turned the Man City game off after 40 minutes to watch Spurs v Fulham. I mean, like Watto said, it's a cup game. You're meant to go for it. Someone should have told Newcastle, because I think they were parking the bus for a draw. I don't know what they were doing. There's no replay, lads. But yeah, Coventry are going to want United, because I think the lower league clubs do want the big game, don't they? And also, we're probably the most vulnerable in a sense. Yeah. We want Coventry because it's like, you know, it's the easiest game on paper. So I think I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, I wouldn't say it's a massive opportunity for United. Coventry will be an interesting game. Fair play to them. But I just think that it just had an underdog feel to it the weekend, with Coventry beating Wolves and Leicester coming back against Chelsea for a little bit. And United, as horrible as it is to say, that was an underdog story. It wasn't like a David Goliath. That you know, it's Man United against Liverpool. That's a great leveller. But, you know, Liverpool in the second half, they're 2-1 up and they're in control. They should score the third goal. And the way it went for United, it was just like you could sense the crowd was starting to believe it, and the momentum shifted, and you know that goal from Ahmad was just the icing on the cake.
There's three goals I want to talk about in a minute. We're going to talk about is three goals that I think we can pick the bones out of from a goalkeeper's perspective. Okay, bear with me, everybody. Bear with me. First, though, was this Manchester United's best performance of the season? And secondly, does this guarantee Ten Hag stays in the job until the end of the season?
I think he has to stay in the job until the end of the season, because he's earned the right to take us to an FA Cup final, which is the third final in 2 years. And you'd imagine we'd beat Coventry. So I think he has to stay until the end of the season, 100%. Was it the best game from United this season? I think for 40 minutes, it was very good, considering the midfield was just a mess. I mean, Maynou played fantastically well, but McTominay and Bruno, I mean, you know, you're up against a really good Liverpool midfield. I thought we played better against Wolves for 60 minutes, but I mean, that's the best, most entertaining game of the season, sure. Definitely. Yeah.
Right, Watto, let's get stuck into it then. Three goals I've just said to you there. I'm going to start with Liverpool's second goal, Mo Salah. But I want to talk about the initial shot. I think it was from Darwin Nunes. He stood his player up, cut it onto his right foot and whipped one. Onana's kind of made a save with his left hand. It looked a little bit theatrical, but he's pounded it straight down into the path of Mo Salah, who's just slammed it in the back of the net. Could he, should he have done better with that original save?
Well, I'll answer it from a coach's perspective, and then I'll rephrase the question to you as somebody who's was a very experienced goalie, played in big games and play at that level. I think from Onana's point of view, when he cuts inside and he opens the goal up, you're thinking, I'm in big trouble. Because if it's a good finish, he's probably going to beat you.
There was a defender behind him. A defender had covered back at least.
Yeah, Varane had gone back. So,
but the one thing is, he's come inside. And I think at that time, you're thinking it's going to be a better finish.
Yeah.
And it's actually not the greatest finish, to be honest. But I think at that point, he knows he's saved it. And that's where I have the question mark for him. Because I think he attacks the ball in a strange way, too aggressively, in terms of his hand positions are here. And he pushes everything in that V in the central area of the goal, which is red flag territory and danger, because it's not all about the first contact. It's the second contacts that put you and the team under pressure, because I expect him to make that save. And I think he knows he's going to make that save. And I think at the point he knows he's going to make that save, instead of attacking with his left hand so high here, knowing that that's opening seconds up for you, because he's never gone for it with two hands. Yeah. And he never looked like he was going to go for it with two hands. I think he just waits a split second longer, because mentally you know you've got the save. And you open up, just step inside it a little bit, and the ball goes now outside down the line of the six-yard box between the post
and
the six-yard line, outside the six-yard box. And worst happens, it's a two-contact finish, because it's going to be a cutback, deep cross or whatever. So that's my question to you. At that point, I think you'd have known you're making that save, and you wouldn't have had to be so aggressive to put it in the danger area.
I think he's panicked a little bit, basically. Like I say, once you know that you're going to make the save, that's the point where the real skill comes into it, doesn't it? Where you have to really be soft with the wrists and sort of buy yourself a little bit more time, whether you take a little bit of a half step backwards, almost sort of push your body out the way so you can get more of an extension on your arm and on your wrist so you can push it over there. I think he gets a little bit too excited, a little bit panicky, and ends up just sort of swatting it down, doesn't he? He takes his legs off the ground, which is needless anyway, but swats it down. And when you palm something down into that middle of the goal, 6 yards out, and you've got somebody, you're going to have Mo Salah there. You're going to have any striker in the world sitting there waiting to just clean up those kind of chances. You've got to be able to get that one away from goal, haven't you?
The reality is, at the level we're talking about, in any level of league football, to be honest, if you as a goalie put that ball in that area,
yeah,
you deserve to be punished, and you're asking to be punished. Mm. And the higher up them levels that you go, you're not going to get away with them mistakes. And as I said, look, I thought in the game itself he did better than on most occasions. But I still think you're going to ask me about the third goal as well. And the level that we're talking about for Man United, I think he should be doing better.
Well, let's talk about that third goal then. This is proper goalie analysis, by the way. I love this kind of stuff. This is geeky, geeky. So bear with us. And if you enjoy this kind of stuff, get in the comments down below because I love talking about this. So let's talk about the third goal that Liverpool scored then. It was a deflected goal. I can't remember.
Harvey Elliott, wasn't it?
Yeah, Harvey Elliott. Who did it take a flick off?
Eriksen.
Eriksen, but then it went through somebody's legs. Yeah. Anana's sort of wrong-footed. Anana's going to his left. He slams the anchors on.
Yeah.
He gets set. And at this point, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be a good save. It's going to look lovely, this is, because he's done all the groundwork. He's got himself stopped. He looks like he's got enough like time and space to be able to fling that arm down there, kick your legs away from you, make the save. Doesn't make the save, though, does he?
No, it's a real strange one because...
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It really good analysis, because everything you spoke about, he's probably got everything right, yeah. But yet the ball ends up in the goal, and it's not in the far corner. No. It's 2.5-3 yards inside the goal. So the first bit I'd question is, obviously, as a goalie and as a goalie coach, these are practices you're doing all the time. It's not the fact of when Elliot strikes the ball. It's when it takes the nick and then goes through legs. Maguire's legs. Yeah. So the shot, 22, 23 yards, when all these points of action come, maybe they're at 16, 17 yards inside the box when it last misses him. He's at 3 yards, so he's got 14 yards reaction time. But in that time, he's done everything you've said. So are they doing this work on the field? I used to do a lot of work with mannequins, poles, because that's as real as you can make situations, apart from being on the dance floor. So he's got the movement to his left, but he's stopped. It's hit Eriksen. Then it's gone through Maguire's legs. He's stopped, and he's getting to the point to push. He looks like he's going to have a good extension. But at the moment, you want that real dynamic movement with the right hand, the drive off your right foot, or chopping away, whichever technique he wants to use, and use the outside of his foot or the inside of his foot off his right foot, nothing happens. Mm. And all of a sudden, the ball's gone in. But this is crucial moments. I think there's a lot wrong at Man United. The sinking. Nobody gets up to the ball. But at that point, they still turn around and think, it's gone in the goal from 23 yards. It's gone 2.5 yards inside the post. And it's minute detail, but at the very top level, a Man United goalie has to stop that ball.
Yeah, it's a simple. I think that what we need to clarify is this is not an Anana bash. This is goalkeeping analysis. Any goal can go in on a Saturday afternoon, Monday night, Wednesday night. I don't care what it is, right? Any goal can go in the back of the net. And from a goalkeeper's perspective, you can dissect it. You can break it down. And what you can say is you could have been here. You should have been there. You could have gotten a better position, or hands lower, hands higher, lower position, body position, to possibly have made the save. You're not always going to make it, but you can put yourselves in better positions to make the saves as well.
Well, it's like interesting, because I was going to ask you two anyway about Kelleher, because I feel when he's running through, Ahmad does great to tackle it. He runs through, it's 2v1. And I think I was like, just the weight of pass from Garnacho has got to be in front of him. So he runs onto it and he's got a really good chance. And he, you know, he's, obviously it's the last minute against Liverpool. You can understand Garnacho. Liverpool missed loads of those passes, didn't they? He plays it a little bit behind him, and I think almost Ahmad's got to take a touch and give it back to Garnacho. And I think he even said that after the game, but he doesn't. He takes the shot on, and I'm like, I don't think he can score from there. And then it goes in the bottom corner. There's not a lot of power on it. It's a little bit like Cole Palmer's against United, isn't it?
I'm thinking exactly the same one because we were...
Is that
very...
just in a good position or should Kelleher do better?
I'm glad that you brought this up because this was the third goal. Yeah. This is the third goal that I wanted to talk about. This is Quevin Kelleher, Ahmad's goal. I think he has to save it.
I think he has to save it. And I think 99 out of 100, he would save that shot.
Really, that much?
Yeah. I think it's that comfortable for him. And you don't want to talk about Alisson missing because I think he's been really good for 10 or 11 games. And when you get a run in the team like that, that's why I think it would have surprised that he's let this goal in because he's had some real good moments. But as soon as he's fired him in on that position, it's very similar to the Cole Palmer one. And it seems to go in so slow. I don't actually think he's moving as much as what Onana did on the Cole Palmer one. I actually think he's virtually there. I think he just has a slight movement maybe to his right, but I still think he's never getting beat there. No. But again, what we've just spoke about, Onana to his right on the deflection, it's slow. He's not planted, he's not pushed, and it's not dynamic enough. We can argue that the placement and all that's perfect, but the ball can't roll past your left hand that slowly and beat you at that moment in time. And goalkeeping at the very top level, that's it. And it's not nice to say, but Alisson would have saved that.
Yeah.
But I think Keller thinks he saved it. When he actually turns and sees it going, I don't believe he thinks he's got beat.
Goalkeepers are an honest bunch. Goalkeepers really are an honest bunch. And I think if Kelleher was sat here today, he would say, yeah, I should have saved it. I thought I had saved it. I looked at it and it went in and I thought, wow, how has that gone in? I should have said. And he will. I'm almost certain that's exactly what he would say. But I think for him going forward, this is, you can learn a little bit from this, because if you look at the whole situation, it's Ahmad Diallo. He's a younger player anyway. He's fairly inexperienced in those situations. You're thinking 120th minute of the game. He's got his head down, right? And he knows he's at an angle. He's not trying to be clever and just slide it round into that near post. He's not going to do that. You know, 9 times out of 10, 9.5 times out of 10, he's putting it back across you. You know that, don't you, what it was a goalie. You're watching his body language, you're watching his head just looking down at the floor. So you know he's going to put it back. You can almost preempt that a little bit. And this is where I think the real top goalies take all of that into account. We're talking split seconds, but he'll take all of that into account, know he's going to put it back across him, and it could have even been a collapse save. It really could have been a collapse save like that. So I think these are all sort of things. As young goalkeepers, they'll take this, they'll learn from this, and in future the situation will arise again, they'll make the save. Simple as that.
It's not the end of the world. You lost the game to Man United.
It's probably the end of the world to Liverpool.
Today's another day. But it's interesting with goalkeepers, isn't it? Because there's so many missed chances by strikers, and you move on from them very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's only the same with goalkeepers.
Yeah. Well, again, this is not a goalie bashing. No. This is quite literally just trying to break it down. And any good goalkeeper worth his salt, any good goalkeeper coach will get into the training ground today. They'll look back at the footage and go, what do you think? And every goalie's really honest.
You must be really good at that when you let that in and you know you've made a mistake. And also, you've lost the game for your team. But also, you would have had a penalty shootout where there's no pressure and you can be the winner.
Brilliant, yeah.
That's the big thing. I'm not sure Onana were buzzing when it went in. He's thinking, oh, I could have been a hero today.
Yeah, I know. Right, let's talk about Chelsea. Another fantastic game, a 4-2 win for them. They got over the line eventually. Leicester played their part, though. Another brilliant FA Cup tie, wasn't it, Wyatt?
Yeah, I mean, really entertaining game. I thought Chelsea played particularly well. Obviously, still went in 2-0 up at half-time. Sterling's played well, missed a massive opportunity. Yeah. Ended up missing a penalty.
He won the penalty and he set up Cole Palmer for his goal at least. So he did some good stuff.
That was the positive bit. I mean, when he took the ball wide, cut it back for Palmer to make it 2-0 at half-time, you're thinking, right, that's it really. Yeah. Because Leicester had not really been in the game. And in all fairness, probably Chelsea should have been 3 or 4 minimum. I was really surprised just with the penalty that Palmer's taken some big penalties for Chelsea this year.
Always scored.
And the need to get over the line. Leicester are no mugs for sure. Yeah. Just take that penalty, put it in at 2-0, and the game should have been done. But anyway, they went in 2-0 at half-time. One of the craziest own goals I've ever seen. I mean, absolutely
like
mental.
Like Lee Dixon. Remember that one, Lee Dixon against Seaman, where he just turned around and just...
Yeah,
and for all that the game is,
can I just say quickly? I don't know if you saw the commentary at halftime or full time. I can't remember who it was, but they almost blamed the goalkeeper.
Yeah,
for
this,
sure.
They did. But that's
now that. Did you hear?
Yeah, but that's goalie bashing.
But this is what I'm saying.
That's
goalie bashing. They blamed the goalkeeper here for being too far out of his goal. The defender's gone to play it back to him. It's come off his ankle, knee, shin, anything, and absolutely spoon over there.
Yeah, you know, as goalkeepers, do you not have like a WhatsApp group that's got about 50 of you in it? Where there's just, no, just this therapy. Because I'm not an ex-goalkeeper, but it's like you say about that Anana one where he palms it and they're going, what a great save. And you're just like, they really don't understand.
The goalies brigade should probably have a WhatsApp group and defend and be critical of each other. But look, that's why I get really annoyed about the analysis from the big guys, if you like. Because the way most teams play, and Chelsea, you know how he plays, he's asking him to be high, whichever goal it is. Obviously, on this occasion, it's Sanchez. He's asking him to play high. So the defender, whoever it is out of the unit, knows where he's playing.
He's going to be in the
because
of his box,
every day this week, that's where he's been playing. Yeah. Because what they're trying to do is, they're trying to shorten the play up, quicken the play up, so when they actually get through the lines, you're in good areas to play. He's not playing in between the penalty spot and the six-yard box, offering the other team up on him, and you're not risking playing through the lines from there because you're not going anywhere. Yeah. He's playing high, speed the game up. When you now play through the lines, you get on a half turn, we've broke the press, and away you go, which is actually Sterling's chance for 2-0 when he puts it wide of the post. Brave play, high up the field. So it's not the goalie's fault in any way, shape or form. The coach sets the team up for him to play that way. That's where he's played all week in the training sessions. The defender has just made a complete arse of it, and it's so bad. It's nothing to do with the goalie. That's where he's been playing.
Goalie's innocent on this one, I think, Mark. Yeah. Let's talk about the penalty then. Let's talk about Sterling's penalty. First of all, what do you make of him taking the ball off Cole Palmer? And secondly, how has the manager not absolutely stipulated who is going to be in charge of taking penalties?
Well, first of all, I was going to say I wanted to just have a few seconds on Cole Palmer because I just think what a player we've got there again. Another great English player coming through. And he's to go into that team at that age and actually be their best player. Mm. You know, he is the focal point of that team. Really excited that he's part of the England setup. But on the penalty, it's weird. We had this at United last week where Bruno took a penalty and then Rashford takes the next one. And I don't know, if I'm a coach, I've got a penalty taker and then it's on me. And then if they miss, it's on me. Yeah. And this whole decision making on the pitch, I think it's too 60s, it's too free, you know. Let's get on with it. And this is your job.
This is business.
It's football. There's massive money. And I just think it's just a bit egotistical of players to be going, he wanted it, so I let him have it. He was feeling confident. I don't give a shit if he's feeling confident.
We've got a set-piece coach next year. This is what he did at England. It's what he did at Southampton, Norwich. But set-pieces, penalties. When it comes to who's going to be taking the penalties, how do you decide? Do you decide it before the game? Do you do it in training the week before? How does it work?
No, look, we train how we train. We would practice more penalties if you knew you were in the FA Cup this weekend and it's going to be decided on the day for sure. And we'd have the whole thing. We'd have game situations and then we'd finish with a penalty shootout.
And there'd be an order selected first, second, third, fourth,
and we'd do that three or four times during the week because you potentially, everybody needs to practice. In terms of in the game time, I always had a sheet at Southampton, for instance. Prowsey were first, and predominantly after that, it were Ingsy or whoever.
And that's if Prowsey had been sent off or was injured or was just not on the pitch for any reason.
And the one thing that we would stipulate, which is what you're talking about, Man United last week, so Prowsey would have taken that first penalty. If he thought at that point that like the goalie might have had one over him, he scored, but we wanted a change, as long as it was the second guy on the list and they spoke, I'm happy. Yeah. I'm not giving it to somebody who's not on the list or fourth or fifth, and you would decide in that time, but it has to be one of the two of them if they want to change.
So they
would have that scope in terms of that moment, especially
that's not very often,
on a
is
second
it? It's not
penalty.
Very common, is it?
No, but I would still expect Prowsey to pick up the ball, and if he wanted to take it, I'm happy for him to take the second penalty. Yeah. But they decide that on the field, but it's not going further down the line. So I always stipulated one and two, and that's as far as we went, to be honest with you.
We're going to talk about Coventry. Fantastic 3-2 win over Wolves. What a turnaround. Two goals in the last sort of 7-8 minutes of injury time. Just quickly, though, the actual penalty that Sterling took, I just want to talk about the technique of it, basically. As he ran up for it, he might be quicker than ever, by the way, Raheem Sterling. Do you see him? He was just rapid. But the way he ran up for the penalty, his feet looked like they were going 10 to a dozen. And then when it came to actually executing the actual kick, it's like he got his feet stuck underneath him or something. It was a terrible connection, kind of almost off the heel, like just off centre. Easy save for the goalkeeper in the end. But I just thought, wow, that looks like really unconfident, really uncomfortable.
It just looked like he didn't want to be in that moment. But yeah, that's why I don't understand why we're taking the penalty. Because if you're feeling that way, don't put yourself under more pressure.
No.
He's trying to second guess the fact of the feeling of scoring the goal and what it'll mean to him and obviously the team. But he obviously didn't really want to be in that place at that moment. So let the guy who's been very good at it take it. And you've earned the penalty. You've done your bit for the team.
Right, some interesting chat on Ben White in a minute. He decided not to be selected for England for the upcoming friendlies. Before we do, we've got to talk about Coventry, though. Fantastic 3-2 win against Wolves, setting up a juicy semi-final tie against Manchester United. Did you watch this one, Matt?
No. No, I did. I turned it on for the last 10 minutes. I wasn't going to watch it because I thought, well, you know, it's a Saturday without Premier League football. I'll give it a miss. Yeah. And I saw what was going on with them winning. I think I tweeted what's going on with Coventry with like 10 minutes to go. Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable, because they got back into it, Wolves, didn't they? And you think, well, you know, that's it. They get out of jail. And then Coventry go again. They thoroughly deserve to win it. I was very surprised. We've been massive fans of Gary O'Neill this season, but I'm really pleased for Coventry because I think Mark Robbins just gets so underrated for many years. He's done such a good job, and it's fantastic. I mean, I remember my first FA Cup final as a kid that I remember watching in the entirety was Coventry against Spurs in 1987.
Never forget that Keith Elchin diving header. Boom.
Yeah, I think Gary Mabbott scored an own goal.
Yeah, Mabzy, yeah.
But, I mean, that's the modern-day equivalent for them, to be in to be in a semi-final for Coventry. I mean, nothing will ever top 87, but that's just incredible for them. And he's done such a good job there. And I think the gap between the Championship and the Premier League has been really exposed this year when you think about the games between Sunderland and Newcastle and West Brom and Wolves. So for Coventry and Leicester to go and give Premier League teams a go, I think it's been a really good weekend for the Championship, topped off by Coventry.
I'm going to put it out there as well. I think this semi-final against Man United is going to be, it's going to be a tough match. I think it's going to be a tough match. The way Coventry played yesterday, 24 shots against Wolves, they had 12 on target. It was no fluke they won this game, was it?
No, I think he's been incredible, Mark Robbins. Last year, playoff final against Luton. Yeah. Probably expected to win.
Oh, penalty heartache.
Lost his two best players, Hamer, Gorkes is ripping it up in Sporting, Portugal. So, they've used the money well. I only watched the last half hour, actually. But phenomenal game. I think Mark Robbins, as you rightly said, very much underrated. They play proper football. It's attacking football. I think, rightly or wrongly, we can give them all the credit, but they got Wolves at a really good time. Yeah. They're really struggling with injuries and all the fallout with that. But at the end of the day, the last 5 minutes of that game, when Wolves suddenly got back and got 2-1 up and Coventry had missed chance after
so
chance.
Chances,
I remember Sarr had made some great saves, but then he rolled the ball out and I can't remember, is it Sims or somebody, should have just dinked him in. That went wide. And then as soon as Wolves got one, through poor defending, if truth be told, the momentum were there. And I mean, the second goal is, it's world class. It's phenomenal football. Yeah. And you think it's finished, but that's what the FA Cup brings. You're still fighting it. It's ping pong. And over the course of it, I think they deserve to win the game.
Yeah.
Gary O'Neill, with the timing and everything, certainly unhappy with it. But Mark Robbins' team deserve to win that game. And they'll be looking forward to playing Man United at Wembley, I'll tell you that.
Did you see the Mark Robbins celebration in front of the ball boy? Gary O'Neill was not very happy about it. Whatever. It's football. It's passion. You know, there was some horrible stuff that went off at Old Trafford yesterday in relation to this. I just don't get it. As a United fan and Liverpool fans, this tragedy mocking and stuff. You know, when people in the height of celebration are doing stuff like that, I wonder what they're doing elsewhere in their lives. Because that's just a weird, horrible, vile element. But Mark Robbins going up to a ball boy because he'd been holding onto the ball for too long. It's a grow-up lesson. You know, welcome to life, young man.
It's a grow-up lesson. Ball boys are getting above their station. Yeah. It reminds me of that one, that Swansea-Chelsea one a few years ago. Do you remember Eden Hazard? He turned out to be a millionaire, by the way, everybody.
Yeah, he's got
the
like
ball
vodka,
boys
are
getting coached better than the teams, aren't they?
But do you see what I mean?
They are part of the tactics, ball boys.
He's got the ball.
Ball persons.
He's time wasting, and then Mark Robbins goes to get the ball. He drops the ball, like almost taking the mick out of Mark Robbins. So rightly so as well. I don't blame him. Blame Mark Robbins.
Game management from the ball boys is incredible, or ball girls at the stadium.
It's
unbelievable. They are getting well coached.
They are.
Well coached.
It's political correctness gone mad. You can tell people off and you can mock them. in a banter way, and that's what Mark Robbins did.
Exactly that. Well done, Coventry. Massive win, and I look forward to coming and watching that one, because I'm going to go and get some tickets to the Man United Cov game. Right, we've got to talk about Ben White then, everybody. This has been some big news, hasn't it, in the last week or so. The England squad was announced. Ben White was omitted yet again. However, Gareth Southgate has come out and done an interview where he did say that he wanted to call him up. He spoke to Arsenal, he spoke to Adu, and Adu had informed him that Ben White did not want to be considered for selection. A few very big names have come out this week and done interviews. Ian Wright, Harry Redknapp, absolutely slamming Ben White, saying it's a disgrace. How can you reject a call-up from the England team? What are your thoughts on this, Matt?
I think it's a bit of a joke from Harry Redknapp and Ian Wright, to be honest with you, because the Ben White thing almost distracts from the fact that this England team isn't selected on form anymore. It's not been selected on form for a long time. I look at that team that he's picked last week with Jordan Henderson in it, and I look at someone like James Ward-Prowse or Gibbs White or Ross Barkley, or even, you know, the lad Loftus-Cheek who's playing for Milan, and I just think Southgate doesn't pick a team on form. Yeah. And that's the bigger thing for me. I think that the nepotism that Southgate portrays in his England selections is a disgrace. So for Ian Wright and Harry Redknapp to come out and say, oh, it's a pride thing, you shouldn't reject your England team, well, like, maybe we should get a manager who actually picks it on fairness, first of all. As for Ben White, I remember Michael Carrick doing it, and yeah. I think you did it.
Yeah.
I think Carrick got to a point in his life where it's a lot of travelling. He'd sort of been, misused by United, by England, not been picked. And he was like, I don't want to go away from my family on an international break to just be on a training ground and then not get picked for players that I probably think I should get picked for. And, you know, I think we're long past the day of, oh, it's a pride thing. If you get picked for England, you need to play. It's a long season for people. You don't know what the relationships are like. It might be a really uncomfortable situation for Ben White to go into. And let's be honest, he ain't going to play in the Euros anyway. Yeah. So he's got a right to say no. And as I said, I don't think the England setup at the moment is really one where we can say, you know, everyone's being picked on, you know, form reasons anyway.
I think you're spot on, mate. I think that was absolutely brilliant. I totally agree. I think it's hard to know exactly what Ben White is like as a character. There's been loads of stories floating around before about the fact that he doesn't particularly like football away from it. Obviously, when he turns up to his day job at Arsenal, he trains very well. See him on a Saturday afternoon. He's been one of the best right-backs in the Premier League this season. As simple as that, hasn't it? But when it comes to all the other stuff, I get the vibe that he doesn't really enjoy it all. He doesn't like the show of it all, especially going away with England. It's a two-week period where he can have a real rest, a real shutdown, escape from it all, not have to worry about football. And when you're somebody that doesn't particularly love all of that stuff, all the trappings that come with being a footballer, that is a real great chance to...
Is the international break a nice thing then, as a player, if you're not...
Well, you said there earlier about the fact that I rejected an England call at once, and I did. So when Fabio Capello was manager, I was in the process of having children. So my kids were just being born, 1 and 2, very young. And I knew that I wasn't going to be playing when I was away with England. I knew it. I knew I was going there basically just to make up the numbers. So I didn't really get too much respect from Fabio Capello either. I've said a story before where my son was born and I rushed off to the birth. And very quickly, I was on the phone to him later on that night saying, no, we need you back. There's an England game tomorrow. Like, you need to be on the bench. And I was like, well, do I need to be on the bench, really? Like, I've just had my son. It would be really nice to spend some time with him. And he's like, no, you're going to play the second half. You're going to play the second half. I didn't play the second half. I left. I came back, sat on the bench, did not get a minute of football. And I just thought, ooh, I don't like that. That goes beyond it for me. So I came out the next international camp and said, I'm not going to be joining up with the squad because I'd rather spend it with my family, with my newborn children. And that's the way I saw it. I really enjoyed that time. And again, you've got to put yourself in Ben White's shoes. If he doesn't like new environments, new people, you know, he might be an anxious character. You just don't know what these sort of people are like. So I'm with him. If he enjoys, you know, these international breaks, just getting away from it, relaxing, then power to you, mate. You've been around the England teams before. You've seen what it's like with these dynamics, new players coming from new teams, trying to join a group of another 30, 40, 50 people. Is it a daunting place to be at times?
It's a very daunting place to be. And the first few times you're around it, it is difficult. And I don't think there's another goldfish bowl like it. Yeah. I think in the modern time, we have to respect his opinion for sure. Look, there's a lot of stories about something's happened potentially with him and Steve Holland. And actually, if he's not very comfortable to go back into that environment, probably the rest of the team in some ways might be relieved because it's an awkward situation for everybody. It might change the dynamic of the squad, the setup.
Yeah.
So he might have thought, not only for himself, but the bigger picture, look, this is not for me at the minute. All the things you've rightly discussed. As a young kid, for me, it would have always been the pinnacle. But I think there's bigger things in life and bigger challenges. Mm. And at this moment in time, if it's not the right thing for him, I think it's the bigger, braver man to make that decision. We have to support his decision in that. The door's not shut. It keeps the environment good for the rest of the England team if he don't want to be in that goldfish bowl. And I think we just have to say, right, just keep doing your football. You are one of the best, if not the best, right back in the country at the minute. When your time comes, the door's there and we can't shut it for you. End of story. Support him and just go with the lads who at this moment in time actually want to be there.
Yeah, simple as that. And again, there's loads of stories out there about him not getting on with all the other players. And all the, I spoke to Aaron Ramsdale about it and he said, he's a top lad. He said, Ben White is a top, top lad. Don't worry about anything like that. None of that is true. He's just a top lad. So anyway, we wish you well anyway. And listen, England are blessed with plenty of good players anyway, so I'm sure they'll be absolutely fine. Shall we talk about Harry Kane? I'm wearing a Bayern Munich top today, by the way. It's no coincidence that we're going to talk about him because he got a little injury at the weekend, didn't he? Scored his 79th goal of the season for Bayern Munich, but had to go off after, I think he collided with a post or something, didn't he? Or did he collide with a post?
Yeah, I think he did, yeah.
Did he, yeah. I think he collided with a post or... Either way, he's twisted his ankle a little bit. Should England be worried, Mark?
I'm sure he'll be absolutely fine. I think it's good that he goes to be part of the setup. It's the last international get together before the tournament, so it's really important that, you know, the lads sort of have that, and I think it gives him a bit of a boost for the end of the season knowing that that's coming. So, I mean, he probably won't play against Brazil and Belgium, which actually I'm quite looking forward to in the international break, to be honest, having a couple of decent games. But that's an opportunity for Ollie Watkins, but it is a reminder actually. I think we're going to win the Euros despite Gareth Southgate, but we are in that window now where we've seen it with like the metatarsal of Beckham and Rooney, and we've seen it with other players. You pick up a hamstring or an ankle or something like that, you're out. So, you know, there's a lot of big football games. You know, they Bayern Munich got Arsenal as well, which is a big game. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Hopefully it won't happen if we lose one or two big players before the end of the season for this tournament.
It was his 31st goal of the season, league goal of the season, by the way. Which
it felt like he's 75th.
Which is just ridiculous. 31 league.
Not going to win the league, though, is he?
Is it? No, well, yeah, it doesn't look like that, does it? A new Bundesliga record, by the way. He's still going to join up with the England squad, though, Watto. Is that the done thing, is it? When a player that's like, you know, that's normally in the squad, if he picks up an injury the week before, goes away with the England squad.
Yeah, done? Look, I think for him as captain...
Is it team spirit?
Yeah, I think he's captain of the team, isn't he, for sure? And I think it just shows some quality and leadership from him. Mm. My personal take on it is, look, we're not necessarily building a team around him, but he's certainly our number nine for the tournament, whichever way we want to look at it. He doesn't have to prove against Brazil and Belgium that he's our number nine. I actually think turn up, maybe have a day or two with the lads, see everybody, go home and have 10 days rest. You recharge your batteries. It's going to be
get
a big
summer. Get yourself to Dubai, Harry.
Get yourself...
Have a nice little bit of sun.
Get yourself off. We know everything about you. You're knocking goals in for fun. There's no worries. Give the other lads a chance. It might actually be able to tweak a formation and tweak a little bit of tactics because obviously Watkins can run in behind.
Potential plan B for the Euros.
Have a plan B. Let him rest up. We don't want anybody out of the squad to get injuries or problems, but certainly the bigger players, it's going to be a problem if you get them. Wrap them up in cotton wool. We don't need to see him for 2 weeks. And England will certainly be able to carry on and cope without him for sure. But it gives us another option for the summer.
Man United have got a player doing this. Martinez has been out for 2 months. He's going up to the Argentinian squad. He's not going to play. He's flying all the way to Argentina to...
See, that's the bit for me where I just think it's a little bit ridiculous, really.
Well,
it's
the modern way, isn't it? They want him there because they've got the Copa America. The club feel it'll be good for him mentally. It probably isn't the done thing in the past, but it seems to be more done
now.
Well,
listen, if he wants to go, and it's going to be good for him mentally, it's going to be good for the other Argentina players.
Probably get better because he's close.
Exactly.
He's close to being back. Yeah. So 2 weeks with the Argentinian squad is going to be better than what's left at Carrington, isn't it?
So maybe that is a good thing in that terms. I think for Harry Kane, I agree with you. I think this could be up to Gareth here to say, listen, mate, couple days, say hello to everybody. Let the medical team just have a little looky around, call them, boom, get yourself off. Sweet, isn't it? We've got a quiz coming in a minute. Before we do, though, Spurs being Spursy.
Fulham were brilliant, though.
This is like, What a game. Football's incredible, isn't it? You can never predict anything. I don't care who you are. If you say, oh, it's guaranteed they're going to win, and no chance on this earth, 3-0 Fulham won. What a game of football.
I think, I said it on Saturday night, like Fulham, to me, epitomised the strength of the Premier League, because we always talk about how strong the Premier League is, and you talk about the top three and everyone like that. But the real strength of the Premier League is teams like Fulham, who are, you know, mid to bottom half the
Fulham
table.
Fulham at home are a different Fulham.
Yeah, and they can give everyone a game. And that's why if you go to the Bundesliga or you go to La Liga, they haven't got Fulhams that will give Spurs, you know, the top six team a run. And they didn't just give them a run. I thought their wing play was brilliant. I mean, the two of their goals were brilliant goals. I mean, that left back, Robinson, I think he could do a job at a higher level. I know he's 26, 27 now, but he was fantastic. The, you know, Willian always has that capability in it. But they moved the ball so quickly. That Muniz scored a couple of goals again. I was stunned, really. You look at that Spurs starting lineup and you think, they're in such a great... I haven't beat Villa. It's like what United did. We beat Villa away and you're like rubbing your hands. Then you lose at home to Fulham. Spurs beat Villa away and then they're away to Fulham, which is tougher. But you're like... The league is just amazing, and you just don't know what you're going to get. I would have had Spurs down. Fulham's a difficult place, but I'd have had Spurs to win that. But Fulham were just fantastic.
Tottenham were very, very wasteful, by the way, can I say. Some of the chances they missed. Timo Werner in particular, he had one chance later on in the second half. The game was already probably dead by this point anyway, but a ball zipped across the face of the goal, 3 yards out. He's just got to put a contact on it. Hits his top of his shin and goes right over there. And they had loads of... Big glaring chances, but they just didn't have their shooting boots on.
Didn't have the shooting boots on. I thought Spurs, at the start of the game, were on the front foot, which you'd expect. They're trying to get into that top four. But Fulham and Marco Silva, the top players, the top manager, and that's what the Premier League is. And Fulham are doing the bit for the league. They beat Man United, they beat Spurs. They deserve to win the game. We will say Spurs were a little bit wasteful, but Fulham were brilliant on the night, you know what I mean? And that is what the Premier League is. You never roll in up at Fulham thinking it's an easy 3 points, that's for sure.
It's the first time in 39 games that Spurs have failed to score in a Premier League game, which is it's a good record, but, you know, well done to Fulham. Good.
That race for fourth place is going to be really interesting. Villa and Spurs. Villa, obviously, drawing at West Ham, but the Europa League on a Thursday night, Conference League for them, which they're going to take very, very seriously. And Spurs, you know... Can Ange get them over the line? They've had a good season.
Well, I think it looks like it's going to be five now for the Champions League, doesn't it? Because of the way, I don't know how that works, but basically the further the English teams get in Europe, the more chance we have of having five teams go to the Champions League, and we're all actually doing really well.
Is Man United a chance, mate?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I think we'll hang in there. We've got three massive games after the break. But, you know, 6 points is still a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot when you're so close.
When you've got 10 games left, you're sort of counting down a bit. But, like, you have a go, don't you?
Damn right. It's going to be a good end to the season either way. You ready for the quiz, lads?
I am, yeah.
Ready?
Go? Yeah. Get it on, quiz time. Right, it's finally poised. Quiz scores on the doors. Me on 9, Mark on 9, Watto's miles off it on 5. But let's go, Jamie. We good? 10 questions, yeah?
We've already got 10 questions and a tiebreaker if we need it.
Let's get it on.
Question 1. At what club were Michael Owen and Asmir Begovic?
Newcastle.
Stoke is the answer. Not Newcastle. I'm sorry, Watto.
No problem. I'm just got to get in there today.
Yeah, I like it. Sharp, lads.
I thought you'd know that, being a goalkeeper.
Fozzy's still asleep.
I was still asleep.
But is Begovic still at Everton now?
QPR. Super hoops.
Yeah. Question 2. Xhaka left Arsenal in 2023, but which country did he choose to join?
Switzerland.
No.
So he's gone from Arsenal to a country.
Yeah.
Germany.
Germany's.
Wow.
Oh my.
I've got that right, haven't I?
Yeah, he's got it right.
He's had two shots in the dark, though.
Yeah. Oh, come on, Jay.
And I was going to say Germany as well.
You were going to say.
No, I ain't ruined it. You've ruined it. The bloody questions are disaster.
Should we cancel
mate?
That question cancel and use question. A tiebreak as the question
instead?
We'll pretend that never happened.
So pretend that never happened. Let's just go quite straight to the tiebreak question, which is now question number 2.
Okay, yeah, we can do that.
And if we get a tiebreak... Well,
would you have got that right? What was the answer, Germany?
It was Germany, yes. He went to Bayern Leverkusen.
I was going to say...
I knew the team. I knew the bloody team and everything.
I was going to say Turkey, to be fair.
I thought Bayern Leverkusen would be quite easy, so I thought, which country did he join? Yeah.
You worded that awfully bad.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Let's just forget
you went for his nationality, didn't you?
Yeah.
OK, Okay, so once you say an answer, he can't say any more. Okay.
All right. He doesn't know this. He's done about 30 episodes.
I've only got.
It's new tactic. Just chuck out answers.
Yeah.
So, question
two.
In May 2022, Chiellini announced that he would leave where?
Juventus.
After.
LA.
It's Juventus.
Oh.
It's Juventus. Correct.
LA? That's French, isn't it, mate?
Didn't
French.
He sign for LA?
No, so the end of the question was after being for 18 years at that club.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Juventus is the correct answer. So, what is on the board?
I'm on the board, mate. You're still asleep, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
You've been on Zvith this morning.
He's going on, he's going on the B of the bang.
Question three. Who was the first English player to win the league title in four different countries? Also the only player to do this as well.
Frank Lampard?
No.
David Beckham?
David Beckham's the correct answer. Yeah,
come on, we're back on.
You're back in, mate.
England.
PSG. France. AC Milan.
Yeah. Italy.
La Liga.
Real Madrid, huh? Gee.
That's good. Red record for him.
Yeah, good question, that.
Question five.
Question four.
My thing says question five. Apologies. Manager career path question. I have managed Italy as an assistant. Reggina. Parma.
Bialy.
Nope.
Mancini.
Juventus. Nope. AC Milan. Chelsea. PSG. Real Madrid. Bayern Munich. Good, yeah. Napoli. Everton. Real Madrid.
Oh, Ancelotti.
Yeah.
Carlo Ancelotti.
See, sometimes, you know, when you're nice and calm, good things come to those who wait, you know.
I know.
I wish I had waited there.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody.
That's why I've got the green on.
Yeah. 2-1-1. And me, green. Oh, that one. I'm looking in the monitor. 2-1-1.
Question five. Who is the only player to win the Champions League with three different clubs?
Seedorf.
Seedorf is the correct answer.
Ooh, we had this before.
Oh, you've
wasn't
pulled
on
that.
My list. It wasn't
pulled,
on my
you've
list.
You pulled
got,
that one
I've
out.
I've got a database. I've got a database.
Who pulled. Did that dance in the FA Cup? Who did that dance in the FA Cup?
That's Pardew, isn't it?
Pardew. Pardiola.
Do we get a point for that?
Someone did it on my live chat.
Ah.
Seedorf. Good on.
3-1-1.
You produced there.
1-1. Player career path question. I have played for Hereford United.
Jarabone.
Oh no, that's impossible. That is impossible. You know, come on, that's impossible.
You know.
That's impossible.
That's correct. Hull City.
Impossible.
I just want to say they worked together all week. Me and Watto come in on a Monday.
We did a podcast with Jared Bowen.
Honestly, that is impossible.
Just because I do my research and I find out about people, all right? I'm interested in people's lives.
Hereford? They must have had a million players.
Nope. Yeah, but none of any note. You're not going to be talking about John McJohns, are you?
It doesn't matter. It cannot be.
It could be Ian Sweeney.
Name another player that's made it to the big leagues from Hereford.
Who would it, that guy who scored against Newcastle? Ronnie Ratford.
Yeah.
I've never heard of Ronnie Ratford.
Next week, what?
Jared Bowen.
Oh, come on, Jay.
4-1-1.
And we've got four questions left.
Oh, marvellous.
Question seven. Which club are known as the Pirates?
Bristol Rovers.
Bristol Rovers is the correct answer.
I've never heard that.
Can I get three points for that?
I was going to say Plymouth. Yeah. It's got the swords on, hasn't it?
Pilgrims.
Bristol Rovers.
You know, he's good on that. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
4-2-1.
Mark, you're going to have to leave me to try and save the day for you.
I know.
Question eight. Which is the only team that has participated in every FIFA World Cup?
Brazil.
Brazil was the correct answer, and that was Watto.
Oh, was it Watto? Look how happy you are to give it to Watto.
They were so happy to give you the Hereford question. Come on, give us a chance.
It was Watto.
Oh, Watto. Yes, come on.
I'm having to stay quiet now.
That's hard. That's so poor from you.
How many's left? So
two you. Questions left.
Well, I'll come in on the last one, but not this.
4-3-1.
Question nine.
Two questions left. Question nine. Which player did Liverpool sign £64 million from Benfica in 2000?
Nunes.
Nunes.
I got it. I had to get in. We've still got a chance.
Good chance, yeah.
So I was right to jump in there.
You done well, mate. You done well.
Done it. That'd have done it.
That's this is like a decider, mate. This, isn't it?
Yeah.
4-2-3.
4-2-3. Final.
I've got to stay quiet now, Ben.
Question.
Horrible. It's life.
Let's just wait till the question's finished.
Okay? All right, Jay.
You wait till the question's finished.
That's a clue.
No.
Ellis Sims scored two goals in Coventry's big win versus Wolves in the FA Cup. But what Premier League team
Everton.
Did you last at? Everton.
You know, you got that upside down, by the way, the football filler.
Yeah.
Oh, well done, lads. Well done. You know, you're so close there as well. You got all the way to the 10th question. Like, the hope was there. And that's what kills you, you know, because eventually I just go, give it here. I'll rip it off him.
Suck the life out of me. But I do think the Hereford question, we're out of it. You've explained how you knew the answer and all them things. That's bad questioning. He's not giving us a chance on the couch.
And... But Jared Bowen was on the podcast.
Yeah, he's on the podcast. We talked about his career path. We've done this all the time.
He was on the podcast 2 weeks ago.
You just said it was two weeks ago.
It's not the first time we've had he was on the podcast. That's why I know an obscure question. How many VAR moments have there been?
Anyway, get them in the comments. Jamie's questions. Disaster. And I've got one. Oh, my God, Jay.
You're close, but obviously Ben's
Tom goes away.
Obviously Ben's top of
the Tom goes away and the corruption is back.
Well done, Jamie. You were world-class today. Stellar performance. Man of the match. VIP. Jamie Harvey. What a guy. That puts me 10. Michael on 9. What a... Well done.
We need VAR.
Like a quiz.
Well done.
Or a new quizmaster.
We'll see you next week. Football filling. Well done.
That's so bad for me, though.